session number 18614, Reel 8.
Jack Holness relays.
We decided to go for this cup of tea, took the four mugs, two of us, walked down the platform. We're walking along quite happily with our eyes on the tea bar at the end of the platform. All of a sudden, a voice boomed out over a loud hailer, whatever it was, from a sort of tower area. Those two sergeants with the mugs in their hands turn round and go back to your train. If you do not, and you come outside this area, you will not get back on the train again, and you will not get back on this trip home. So turn around and go back. We're amazed at this. But we immediately obeyed and went back. You will receive tea and food eventually on the train. And of course, we went back. We got underway about 11 o'clock that night. We set off from Milan, a very tortuous route. Round the mountains, in and out of the mountains, this Medlock route, which, as I say, was known as the Orient Express route pre-war and since. I didn't know it at that time, but I do know, and it was, bearing in mind it was the depth of winter, and the ice started to form on the carriage windows, the compartment windows, to such an extent. It's unbelievable. Candles would not stay alight when we tried to light candles. It was so cold, the heating was put off at night on the train, and the lighting were in total darkness in the compartments. The train's travelling along at a steady pace, and we lit candles and placed them on places for advantage, but they just went out. They curled up. It was so cold. They went out, curled up. The ice was forming on the outside of the train to thickness, half, three quarters of an inch thick, ice and snow. We couldn't see out of them in any way for long enough. I have a memory of coming through the Simplon Tunnel in Switzerland on this route, and the train just stopping through the tunnel. Part of it was still in the tunnel when we stopped, and we were just outside of it. And I can remember a Swiss Army officer with his pillbox hat, coloured pillbox hat, walking along the train, and we managed to get window down, and he greeted us with a Happy New Year, this Swiss officer. We're hanging out of the train, and I had a view of the aperture of the Simplon Tunnel itself, the mountains, absolutely snow-clad, you know. And we travelled on to Switzerland, into France, pulling up the next morning at a place called, I think, Domodossola, and then Dijon. And we were given haversack rations, and we were told, we pulled in at one place, I think it was Domodossola, and there were taps along the platform, just taps. And we were told we had to shave. The officers, shave. All the taps were frozen up, solid. We were supposed to shave in cold water at these taps. And we were taken into this place at Domodossola and given another ration there, something to eat, and then another ration for the train. And eventually that night we're the of trains pulling. I saw the lights of Paris. Paris was lit up by this time again. And we sort of encircled Paris on our way to Calais, which we got to Calais the following morning. And we were told then at Calais, we were put into an area like a big shed. They called it transit camp. We just headed together in these places. And we were told it was unlikely that we'd get a ferry that day across to Dover from Calais because of the weather and the lack of ferries or whatever. You better settle down. And of course, Calais was just totally in black ice. It was so cold. The whole conditions were terrible. And Calais was just covered in black ice. And we settled down, more or less, settled our minds we wouldn't get across that day. Then suddenly, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, an officer comes in. He said, pull yourselves together, there's a ferry, you're going immediately. And we were pushed aboard a ferry across to Dover. On the way there, the loud hailers are going all the time. Anyone carrying souvenirs of enemy weapons of any kind, you had better divest yourselves of them, because if you arrive at Dover in possession of anything of the same, you will be immediately sent back to where you came from. There were weapons of all descriptions going over the side. One can imagine. It was amazing what some of the troops had with them. Really amazing. And suffice to say, I hadn't anything of that nature. I was quite aware of beforehand what might go on. Eventually arrived at Dover, and I can be honest with you, I kissed the ground when I arrived at Dover, having been away for approximately 4 years and 1 month then. They took us up to Dover Castle, which was designated the transit point for documentation and various things. I thought I would be given a warrant and on the train for home, sort of immediately. I was much mistaken. Eventually got documented, and I was documented for return to London from Dover, and thence across from Victoria to Waterloo, and return to my training battalion at Pirbright, which I arrived at Waterloo Station that night about 11:30, having come across from Victoria on the tube, fully kitted up, great coat order and full kit bag, pack. I'm standing on Waterloo Station, not alone, because around me were quite a number of young guardsmen with girlfriends, etc., having had a night out in the smoke, saying good night to their girlfriends, wives, or what have you. And eventually I boarded the train for, as I thought, walking Brookwood. The young guardsmen are getting in the train at various points. I seem to be in a compartment by myself. We travelled on to Woking. I sat where I was, totally unaware. It was after midnight. I'd forgotten that train always split up at Woking. Part went on to Aldershot via Brookwood. The other part went on to Portsmouth via Guildford. I was in the wrong half. Some minutes later, I found myself at Guildford at approximately 1 o'clock or after in the morning, very much alone. Ran into a railway employee, explained the situation. He said, I told him how long I'd been away, and obviously I'd forgotten the ruling of the train splitting in two. He said, so you want to be back at Woking then? I said, well, yes, I want to get to Brookwood. He said, well, and you know, you're aware of the Hog's Back, aren't you?
Indeed.
And of course, there's a shunt, a slope, all the way down from Guildford to Woking. He said, I've got a shunt of goods wagons going down to Woking. He said, put your kit in the guard's van, which I did, very kindly. And he said, right. He said, I'm taking this shunt down to Woking. We'll get you down there. Which he very kindly did. By this time, it's probably 1:45 in the morning. I got down to Woking, which, of course, was totally deserted except for one railway employee. I said, is there any sort of transport in the area? He said, there's a taxi outside. He said that there isn't another train, but there's a chap sat in a taxi outside. I'll get him for you. I spoke to this taxi driver. I said, all I've got in English money, I said, is a 10-shilling note. I've got that. I said, it's yours if you get me to Pembroke Camp. He said, I'll do that. I eventually arrived at Pembroke Camp. The sergeant of the guard had told me where headquarters company office was. Obviously, I'd seen it 4 years previous. Didn't know what changes had taken place. And it's also pitch dark. I had a torch with me. Eventually found the headquarters company office. Went in. It's just a nightlight on in the place, and a desk, and as they were in the army in those days, just a 6 foot trestle desk, and there was a Hessian curtain behind which was the duty clerk's bed. I walked in, the sleepy headed duty clerk came from behind this Hessian curtain. Sergeant Holness was in a pretty foul mood, as well can understand, having travelled and travelled and travelled, and at this time in the morning. The duty clerk came from behind the curtain, and his first words were, what do you want? In that tone of voice. Until he rubbed the sleep out of his eyes and saw the three stripes on my arm. And then apologised for his behaviour. I said, I want a bed. I've travelled all day, all night, all yesterday, all the day before. I said, all I want is somewhere to lay my head. He said, you'll have to go down to one of the huts. I said, you take me to one of the huts. I said, I don't know where I'm going. I said, I remember the old black huts I lived in, but I said, I've been away too long to be able to find these. So he took a lamp with him, I had the torch, and he showed me to a hut. I looked in, there's nothing there, don't fancy that. So he'd gone back to the office by this time. The next hut I found, shined the torch, it was the Sergeant Major's company office. Sergeant Major opened the door, it was open. I went in there. There was a trestle table in there, a couple of chairs. There was a blanket on each of the two chairs. I put those down on the deck. well, not stripped off, down to me, yeah, slacks off, and down I went on the deck in the office, to be walking about six next morning with a tap on my heels, with the sergeant major standing there. Who are you? What are you doing here? Told him. He said, Red. He said, come on, get yourself dressed, he said, and go and have a wash and shave, he said, and I'll take you down to the mess for some breakfast with me. We'll go down to the mess for some breakfast, he said, because you'll have to go to adjutant's orders at 8:30. Your arrival. Shook hands, and we went down to the mess. I had breakfast, sat with him, Sergeant Major Trimming, I'll never forget him, very nice chap. And eventually, I attended adjutant's orders at the orderly room, the RSM, of course, in charge. And I have to march in and see the adjutant. I'm standing outside with the Sergeant Major. This Sergeant Major Trimming, who, of course, would go in with me. And I was wearing what would be described in the Guards as rather a bolo SD cap. It was too rigid, too much up and down, too rigid.
Bolo?
Bolo was the word, yes. In other words, in the unit, not allowed to wear. Yeah, too rigid, set up too rigid, because we used to cut the peaks of our SD caps and set them up so that it gave us a, like, could just
come down over your nose.
That's right, that's right. And that was too severe, the one I'd had abroad at that time. It was too severe. The RSM.
Is SD well service known. Dress?
SD cap.
What does SD mean?
Service dress, yeah. The Sergeant Major, well known at that time, called Nippy Kirk, RSM Kirk, Nippy Kirk, quite a number of years older than me, been around quite a long time, peacetime soldier. And he was taking the adjutant's parade that morning for adjutant's orders. He walked up to me. Took the cap off my head. He looked at it, placed it back on my head, turned to the Sergeant Major, said, get him a new one immediately after this parade. Went in to see the adjutant. The adjutant said, you'll be wanting to get home. I said, you could say that, sir. He said, well, Sergeant Major Trimming will look after you and get hold of an officer to issue some ration cards and pay some money, and you can get yourself moving for home. He said, you'll be anxious. I said, yes, sir. So, Sergeant Major's with me most of this time. He said, get what kit you don't want to take home with you into the stores. He said, and go and draw, we'll go and draw you. Peak stuck out here, like I wasn't time to have it cut in the tailor's shop. Horrible SD cap I was given. And he said, come on, I've got hold of a junior officer and he'll pay you and give you your ration cards and all the rest of it required and your warrant for the trains. I did all this, got rid of my kit in the stores and down to what I wanted, just my big pack with two bottles of whiskey in it. I might say I was carrying all the way from Italy, from my dad. And one or two other bits. And I thought, I'm all set. Be about, by this time, 11:30. You weren't supposed to leave the camp until after duties. I've given special permission to leave the camp sat major said, in cahoots with me, he said, if you want to get off and get out, he said, I shall be aware, but nobody else will. He said, if you walk back up to the, towards the, what was known as Scots Guards lines, which was the next part of the lines, away from our own guard room, to catch the Aldershot bus, which came through the main road of the camp from Aldershot and went on as far as Brookwood, where you could get a train. But I had to go through the Scots Guards lines to get the bus. I was walking through there on my way, thinking, well, all I've got to do as we approach our own guard room is bob down as we go past the guard room, and I'm on my way to Brookwood. I'm just about to reach the main road when there's a young guardsman running, shouting of me, Sergeant. Gave me the message, Sergeant Major Trimming wants you. You've got to go back. He said, I think he said, you're wanted for CO's orders at 12 o'clock. I had to go back, make my way back. So Sergeant Major Trimming, he said, I'm sorry, Jack. He said, RSM's sent a message. You've a CO's orders to see the CO. That's the colonel. At 12 o'clock, because in the army you have adjutant's orders first thing in the morning, and then midway you have CO's orders, 12. So I have to start bulling up in the short time I have. Boots, I've got to get gaiters on, blancored gaiters, belt, bull up for orders, because you had to attend orders in a certain mode of dress. Eventually managed to do this and was marched in to see the CO, 12 o'clock. I was asked at that time if I'd consider signing on at that time. And I said, no, sir, at this point, all I want to do is go home. Anyway, that was over with. I got out, eventually got out of the camp, on my way, got a train from Brookwood into King's Cross, and I eventually arrived in Hull. Marvellous to see that muddy river as the train ran along there. And I arrived in Hull at sometime after 11 that night.
What kind of reception did you get from your family?
I had sent telegrams from Dover home and to my girl. She was up in Catterick, so I'd sent one off to Catterick and one home, that I'd arrived UK. That's all I could put. Have arrived UK, time, stop, hopefully home soon. And of course, it was a further 36, 48 hours after when I eventually arrived home. The reception I got was, my girlfriend was, she'd got through from Catterick and was in with my parents when I arrived home. I tumbled out of a taxi from Paragon, and one can imagine.
Had Hull changed much in those 4 years?
I hadn't seen much of at that time, of course, coming home, but I did get taken out. My girl and I, we did go up the town, and there were various landmarks which had been blotted out, obviously, with the bombing. Things had changed, especially around the Victoria Square area, certain areas really around there that managed to knock out certain buildings which had always been there. You know. But I suppose I didn't take a lot of notice. I didn't go into the city centre much, really. I got into what would fit me of civilian clothes as soon as I could for a while. And enjoyed, well, a week with my girlfriend. Then she had to go back to Catterick, but I had a further 3 weeks leave. We got 28 days disembarkation leave in those days. And then after my 28 days, I had to go back to Pirbright, take up the threads again as to what I was going to do. I still had, from the information at hand, probably about 6 months to do before demob. And I was more or less a spare sergeant at the time. I went into the CO again, was taken into orders again, asked if I would sign on, if I'd consider it, I could take over the orderly room there at the training battalion, having the qualifications to do just that, and people being demobbed, and I had the qualifications of a chief clerk, pay sergeant, and he said, if you'll sign on, he said, I can promise you promotion to ORQMS within 6 months. I was promised promotion, which would have materialised had I signed on. I think I was a bit foolish in refusing it at the time. But of course, having been away so long, and I was going home to get married, more or less, I refused. So over the, I was given various tasks for the first month. I was given escort duties, which I carried on, escort duties to Chester and somewhere else, I forget now, to bring back bad lads, various places, lads that wouldn't had been absent for quite some time, and warned by other sergeants who'd said, "Oh, you're going for so and so, are you? Oh, he's a bad one. He'll more or less evade your clutches between the tube stations if you're not careful." I was careful, very careful. I got my prisoners back in a lump. I was then approached, would I like to take over the garrison fire station, in charge of the garrison fire station. I knew nothing about fire pumps that were used by the Army Fire Service in those days. I'll give it a go. The sergeant was being demobbed. There was a corporal there. And I was given a week in which to learn how to operate these auxiliary fire pumps. And there were 4-inch, and then there was a 6-inch scramble on the camp. And there were various fire points right throughout, which was to be my responsibility. Standpipes and hose pipes. I had to quickly learn, and I did very quickly learn.